When you've gotten accepted to university, but you still have to graduate, it's That's So MLS, the North American Soccer Podcast.
What? I think
Soccer Sodcast.
Soccer Sodcast. That's probably more accurate.
Which can be found at thatsomls.com with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton. Nick, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. I assume you didn't go to Seattle.
I did not go to Seattle. Do we have to start there?
Well, I mean, you know, whatever was the big sort of event of the weekend, I guess.
Some Canadian teams are doing well. Some are.
The big news that is, we're recording this on a Tuesday, and today, what we have been talking about and thinking about and wondering about ever since Alphonso Davies took the pitch for the Vancouver Whitecaps first team, a deal has been reportedly agreed to send him to Bayern Munich at the end of this season, after he turns 18 in November, because he can't legally play for Bayern before then.
And I think only if Kai Kamara goes as a chaperone. So it's nice that that's worked into the deal. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, it was kind of inevitable. There was lots of rumors for the better part of 4 or 5 days over the weekend. It seemed like it was going to happen. And Carl Robinson in his last presser all but confirmed that a European club was going to take him. And he waxed poetic a lot about the benefits and drawbacks of going to a large club and fighting for minutes. But of course, it's, you know, congratulations to Alphonso Davies. It's such an incredible achievement. This is going to be, I don't know what the record transfer fee from MLS to Europe is, but this is a big one.
I believe it is $10 million for Jozy Altidore to Villarreal.
Mm.
So this would break it.
This would break that.
Because it was it's given at 13 million euros, with the possibility to raise to 19 million euros, as per Paul Tenorio of The Athletic.
Interesting. So a bunch of people have obviously, I mean, clearly sports people have been misinterpreting this, because I've heard that number, that dollar figure in Canadian dollars. So
that's wrong.
It'll be interesting to see how that shapes out, because 12 million euros is significantly different than 12 million Canadian dollars.
So Christian Jack said that it was 13 million euros with add-ons that could make the entire package worth a record. He used the dollar sign, 20 million dollars.
Gotcha. I think some folks did not double-check those numbers before they ran with that story.
I think that's what's happening, is that that one tweet used the two different types, and absolutely did the MLSsoccer.com columnist that I'm currently reading not make that dollar transition.
Well, thank goodness it's not NASA. it's a great move. I think the downside of all of this is the Whitecaps are losing arguably their best attacking player. But we get to keep him till the end of the season.
I think that's a
considering the result on the weekend, and in fact Wednesday as well, is a lot of Whitecaps fans, including myself, are going, okay, great, so we make this sum of money, but as we saw with Octavio Rivero, that money might just be sunk into a dark pit that we never get to see, and doesn't necessarily mean it's going to improve our club. I think that's a little cynical. I mean, that sum of money obviously has to pay off, and when you think about the fact that Alphonso Davies is an academy product, I'm not saying there's going to be a lot more players like this with these sums of money, but the academy system is working and the development of players is starting to pay off. Where the money will go, how things will play out for the rest of the season, or indeed next season, of course, that's the question on everybody's minds.
There's a I can't remember, I haven't independently sourced this, but Dwayne Rollins at 24th Minute on Twitter in Canadian Soccer News, He said the other day, and I'm looking for this tweet, that essentially a very small amount of the transfer fee, the transfer fee can actually be used for GAM. Like, it all goes to the team. They will get 100. Okay, so he said on the 22nd, if the Caps sell Davies for $12 million, they will receive all $12 million. Of that, they get 750. They can use 750,000 towards GAM. The remaining money must be sent on soccer-related infrastructure improvements. So it can't go right in the ownership's hands, but it looks like they can't use all of it for player acquisition.
Hmm. I trust there to be some wacky-ass MLS rule that means no one will really benefit. Not that, like, I believe in building up the development of clubs, and that's a large sum of money that goes into soccer-related things. Maybe it could go into soccer-related things like new coaching staff. Who knows? So while we're here, do you want to just talk about whatever that was that happened in Seattle, which was, I think, Kai Kamara was the only player that actually showed up to that match.
So that in that game, a Seattle winning 2-0. Nope, there was a second player in that game, and it was Donnell Henry who got his hand on the ball in the fourth minute. That's true. yeah, I really felt that that was one where the Whitecaps were obviously stunned to be down so early, but also it didn't even seem to be like something to get fired up about either, because the handball was so incontrovertible. So yeah, there was this kind of like then there wasn't a lot of play to even determine who was really ahead or behind at that point. So it was like, oh, like it wasn't a letdown or a fire up, or it almost had no momentum effect except to stun, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Carl Robinson has addressed this to the media to some degree. And I know it's frustrating here talking about little mistakes or stupid mistakes, but this is just that. There's no excuse for it changing the tide of the game, though. And by this point, we'd expect within the first 10 or 15 minutes for Vancouver to give up a goal. But what we'd seen earlier in the season is then they could fight back and at least scrape a draw out of it, or perhaps even win. And this was just complete capitulation. But this is one of the most painful games I've watched them play this season, and I've watched a lot of really painful performances.
And was the statistic that they didn't get a shot on net until the 58th minute? Is that what I remember hearing when I was watching it?
It's very possible, but there's no chemistry between the midfield whatsoever. And, you know, it's interesting that De Jong this week said, it's just not good enough at the moment. And I felt like that sums up the whole back line, it sums up the midfield as well. Just constant giving up of balls. There was really nothing in this match. And what continues to frustrate is the Whitecaps, like many teams early in the season around MLS, are not a bad side. They're just not playing well, and they just don't seem to really have a game plan. They looked flat. They looked completely lacking in energy and just without ideas. And this is the moment where, of course, you are always talking about players that need to show up and perform, and just no one really did. And it was just such a painful performance to watch. This is the one that, as you know, I watching a lot of soccer now around the league, I have a bit more of a nuanced opinion about the team that I support. But I really, this is the weekend that I'm going, I'm not sure I want to throw more money down a dark hole to watch the Whitecaps next year without some major signal of intention from the club. Because I was struggling to find a stream, so I signed up for TSN Go or Go Away or whatever it's called, so that I could watch the match. And then I'm going, so now I'm paying an extra $25 a month to watch, so I have the privilege of watching my team just beef it on the road, plus the $400 I spend per year on, you know, the season's tickets. And I just go, like, at a certain point you go, I'm all about supporting your team, but I think there's many Whitecap supporters this weekend that were asking themselves similar questions. For me, there's nothing in this game to talk about other than it wasn't good enough, and congrats to Lodero for just royally embarrassing us.
And I think that that's a, you know, there was the Canadian Championship, 1-0 loss away in Montreal, and I think the people had a similar feeling to it. You're not the only one I saw with that. The at Sub Hedgehog on Twitter, who's been involved in the Southsiders, Paul Sabour and Herzog, he, you know, talked about how he just has felt his enthusiasm. The enthusiasm gap grow. Like he and it's not that he's not, you know, he wasn't watching the game or he didn't do his effort, but he just felt that the feeling compared to past years had been so much different for him. Mm-hmm. And that's, I get that. It's unfortunate. And I think that, you know, if anything about this Davies decision to, you know, the Davies luck that has him stay until the end of the year is that you can't, it would be so much worse because there's like no proposition for any success. And of course they would say, we're going to wait for the winter transfer window. Well, mm-hmm. That's a long, long time between now and the winter transfer window.
And we all love watching Alphonso Davies play when he's on, but that's putting a ton of pressure on the kid. And I'm sure now he has the incentive to go out with a bang and just do what he wants to do. But I don't really want to pay to see a bunch of Alphonso Davies late minute goals that see us lose 3-1. It's great for the kid, but I think it's just beginning to feel a little bit bitter in the mouths of Whitecaps fans, to put it mildly. But even when we calm down after the match, at a certain point you just go, yeah, like what is there to be excited about right now? The most excited we've been is that this is a great opportunity for Alphonso Davies, and Bayern Munich probably gained themselves some fans from Vancouver. Other than that, what do you get excited about right now at this club?
So more time for Mosqueda. I would say for Nicholas Mosqueda, a four who will take some available minutes, you know, once this is even, you know, far in the future. For this game, the key points that I had, it is nice to see Stefan Marinović back. He didn't look great on the goal, but really it is because he dived early. Just because he got his, if he hadn't have been able to get his hand on it, it just would have been a goal anyway. So the fact that he gets the touch isn't really that important to me. I think that, you know, you got to look at Felipe, who is for some reason like trying to execute a high kick. He's like, you know, 3 feet out of position. The other thing to note that a lot of people are talking about is the Efraim Juarez red card, which is yet another disciplinary issue involving, you know, we've seen a lot involving Juarez and Reyna. And I think that compared to, there's been Whitecaps losses this season where they've had a lot of effort and they've had a lot of passion. And there has been ones where they has not seemed to have a lot of effort and a lot of passion. And that latter one was this one. So how do you square that with the fact that a player got basically, comes about because a Whitecaps attacker is fouled, and then immediately Juarez is fouled, and Juarez kind of loses it because he says, like, how is this not me? How is this the other guy but not me? Or how do I get the foul but he doesn't get the foul? I feel like that in the games in which you've seen Reyna sent off as well are a failure to channel that passion into playing. Like, there's no...
I totally agree. Like, I was going to interrupt you. Like, it's frustration. It's not passion. Oh. It's frustration at shitting the bed. And, you know, I don't want to overstate things because it's easy to get worked up about this game and where they are right now. But for me, Juarez has to go. Reyna has to go. Maybe I'll dial it back. I think they should be benched for the next 2 or 3 games. They haven't proven their worth. Reyna's had a brief good little spell, but he was completely non-present, absent, I think is the word, in this game. So many players didn't show up for this, and I think I'm just tired of seeing those players continue to get chances. And I don't know how many times I can shout it from the rooftops that central defensive mid of Juarez and Felipe does not work. And it's got to be frustrating to be Tybert and Gazelle sitting on the bench watching those two give up the ball, make stupid decisions. I think Felipe has been the much brighter of the two of them. But he's also a playmaker. He's not a natural central defensive mid, and I think he's tried to do that job to the best of his abilities. But there was an awful lot of turnovers in this game, and it's just... There's really not many bright spots to talk about this game. If the thing we keep coming back to is disciplinary issues, and that's the only thing we really have that changes from week to week, we have a problem.
I think that the one thing that you would really benefit from maybe giving Reyna and Juarez, well, Reyna will have the week off. Juarez will have the week off. Do you think that we've given enough time to, I mean, Jordan Much started, but mm-hmm. I feel like we could stand to put a little bit more focus on Much and also Anthony Blondell to give them, because Blondell's played, but I kind of feel like we still haven't given Blondell air to operate in, kind of. He hasn't really, you know, made it into that top three or top four of Whitecaps attackers.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, the reviews of his play in Montreal weren't good. I didn't see any of it, so I can't speak to it. But I agree. I mean, you brought him in as a key signing, and trying to get him minutes will be important. The difficulty is that one of the few players that continues to perform is Kai Kamara. But like so many of our previous strikers that have been thrown under the bus, there's a ton that we're asking him to do. That he's providing that midfield hold-up play, and he's trying to make plays on the wing. And he needs to be the guy in the box. The trouble is, without Davies, he's the guy in the box, but he's getting no service. Mm-hmm. And he is tracking back to defend. So, yeah. I think maybe we should just leave it there.
Well,
I'm all worked up now.
The next point I was going to make, and it's not going to be a happy point, unfortunately, but I think that the true mirror that you can look into this game from to see, you know, how much the opportunity was wasted, or not wasted, but, you know, the team that had the same issue was also trying to recover its form against, you know, coming into the Pacific Northwest, was Montreal, who came into Portland, and were, I think that, you know, because Montreal had the lead, it will be the urge is to make it look like the urge is to think that it's a surrendered set of 3 points, but I think that a 2-2 draw away in Portland, especially as Portland is in its ascendancy, is a positive sign.
I completely agree. I think Montreal has done such a good job of turning around their season, and I'm not even really sure what they did besides just they just seem to start playing better. Tyder has just completely turned on in this month and has really been a source of good inspiration for them. And against a very strong defensive side in Portland, who I actually felt like, although they were able to claw their way back into this one, I felt like it was just some unfortunate goalkeeping errors from Bush, which we don't see often. He didn't have a great game.
And I want to go easy on him and say that it wasn't a bad performance, but there was, you know, the key mistake that he made was on the, Montreal was leading 1-0. And the ball is coming towards him, and instead of trying to collect it, he palms it forward and it falls in.
He almost like spikes it down in front of him, and then Armenteros just goes, "Thank you very much," and pops it in. Yeah. However, yeah, I agree with being kind on goalkeepers. Is it's the kind of thing where you think you're making the right move in the moment, and you're a half inch off, and where you hit the ball just slightly too hard in an effort to try to collect, and you end up spiking it into the turf. It happens to the best goalkeepers on the planet, but I feel like there's so many positives to take out of this performance. And I don't want to put too much emphasis on Vancouver, but I have decided to go to the game tomorrow, and I'm a little bit worried that Montreal just seems to have finally awoken, and the Whitecaps still seem to be spinning their wheels in the mud. But a fantastic result for Montreal, I thought.
It's going to be my birthday. Please yell for me.
Is it your birthday tomorrow?
It's my birthday tomorrow.
Oh, lovely. Well, now I feel better. That takes some of the sting off of the Whitecaps shooting the bed.
I'm gonna be turning 30, so hopefully the Whitecaps score 30 goals and win 31 on aggregate.
Oh, the big 3-0.
Yes.
Sam, you're almost ready for a career in MLS.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I've been talking to Orlando.
Well, give it 5 or 6 years, and then maybe you can then you can play in Miami.
Oh wow. there were some great moves. There were some great moves from Montreal. We see a lot from Piatti, Mancosu, and Tider are three of the players that we often talk about the most in the offense. But Tider was really set up in the first goal by this wonderful, wonderful roll from run from Alejandro Silva.
Mm, yeah. And this is the thing, is that Montreal consistently has shown that they can be a dangerous team, because when they can get the plays right, they just have these really, really outstanding little give and goes and a great understanding of how the sort of front three work. And that's been really impressive. And that's what's been missing all season. So the fact that they're discovering it now, and they've put themselves, at least as of this week, in playoff contention, I think is great. But that's kind of been the story of them in MLS, is that they have these dips and then they make a run, but they still are ultimately quite beatable team. And so for me, it's really about locking that back door and making sure that they're just being a little bit more tidy in their decision making at the back, and conceding fewer goals. But whereas other teams from Canada have suffered defensively, Montreal has at least proven the ability that they can put the ball in the back of the net and at least compete. And considering how strong Portland has been defensively, this is a great result for Montreal.
No doubt.
Well done. Well done, Impact.
Yep. Mancosu's goal is great. The only other note, and not to go back to the goalkeeping, but the only other incident of note was that Evan Bush thinks on Portland's second goal that Diego Valeri is stopping him from collecting the ball by his standing positioning.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that Valeri is making contact in any way.
I don't think he is either. I didn't understand that.
Bush, it's kind of like Bush can't stand where he needs to collect the ball without fouling Valeri. Which is kind of like a basketball play, which in the way that Valeri pushes in, you could maybe make an argument that it's an offensive foul. But I thought that it was pretty contact-free. But Bush loses his shit. And apparently Remy Gard did, because the legend of his strange turnaround season continues as he gets ejected as a part of this play.
Yeah, completely agree with both calls. I mean, I like a coach getting fired up and protecting their goalkeeper, but Valeri has every right to be there in that position. In no way interferes with Bush. And as a goalkeeper, like, that's your job. It's the most thankless position, and you've got to put up with that kind of thing. But you need to be a bigger physical presence in the box. And the thing that I don't get is, do your homework. Like, Valeri loves to be in that box and going for those headers. And you need to be sure that you're bigger than him, or you're having your defender properly mark him, but he doesn't interfere with the goalkeeper. And I thought the no call was correct. And as we will say, I'm sure, many more times on this podcast, is like, make the play. Don't wait for the whistle.
A Canadian team that did do well, and we haven't been saying this much about them, was
Ottawa Fury. Well, no.
We'll get to the Ottawa Fury game.
We do have to talk a little bit about that. It's interesting that Toronto got their first win in a long time against Chicago Fire, because they laid a set one in Ottawa.
They used firepower, absolutely. Toronto FC brought their firepower to Chicago and it won 2-1 on the 21st. In a game that I think showcases, I think that what a lot of people were saying was that Jozy Altidore being back was a great, great help.
Yeah. And it's been said many, many times. Many times, many ways. Jozy Altidore has excellent hold up play. it's so clear that they how much they've missed him, and I know I'm stating the absolute obvious here, but just his movement off the ball, his ability to see things, his hold up play was really, really excellent. And you know, as much as we raved about the strength of Toronto's season or team last season, this just really highlighted what a key figure he was in that. Now, everything in perspective, Chicago Fire has not won a game since 1982 and have continued to just look poor.
Yeah.
So this really was kind of should have been an easy win for just about any team in MLS. However, the things that they've missed in the past, like Giovinco actually getting the ball into the back of the net, all of a sudden things seem to have opened up.
He just walked that in.
Yeah. I still maintain this is too little too late. And I think the competition is good enough that they're going to be held out. Especially with DC United having 14 of their 18 remaining games at home and having, I believe, still 4 games in hand against Toronto. But it's great to see them. It's funny. It's still on MLSsoccer.com. They're like, they're still alive in the Eastern Conference playoff race. They're second from the bottom.
It's just a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound. Okay, the other thing. They're 11 points behind the playoff line, but like, I don't know.
Well,
There was ever a team that was going to make me eat my words, as I did last season, it's Toronto. So who knows? But I think what this was is a positive performance from them. But do you see this as a turnaround for them, or do you just see this as like they were going to win one eventually?
I do kind of to a certain... Well, I don't see it as a turnaround, but what I do see is a little bit of the old Toronto. I saw like maybe a solid like 20 minutes of this game, and like it's the whole season's been frustrated for, you know, seeing those flashes of what the old Toronto team was like last year. And I think that you can kind of see them coming back. One thing that I think is kind of hilarious is going to be, I'm trying to find out the date that this is going to happen, but there's this game coming up on September 19th that they have set, the Campeones Cup, where they play, where they will play Tigres again.
Yeah. What is that about? Why?
So this was something that came up during the Champions League. They're like, oh, we're going to have more Liga MX MLS collaboration. So the champions are going to play each other, which seemed great at the time because Toronto was beating the crap out of Mexican teams. And now they're failing to defeat some of the easiest MLS teams. You think, oh my God, they're going to play Tigres?
The team that beat them.
No, actually, this was the semifinal. So this is a team they did beat. This is the team the Whitecaps beat. The Whitecaps lost to last year, and the team that they then beat
in the quarterfinal. I'm sorry, I've got them all mixed up because Toronto's lost to so many teams this season. That's not fair. That's not fair. Jonathan Azorio to me has still been the bright spot all along here, and along with Nick Haglund, two players that have just continued to arrive and try to make something happen. And it also turns out that Michael Bradley makes a much better midfield player than he does a center back. And while I sort of understand the reasons for wanting a veteran like him at center back, I still maintain they may not be in such dreadful shape as they are now if they just picked a youth player to play center back who was actually a center back. Because this game was like Michael Bradley was back full on display of what he does best, spraying balls from midfield, breaking up play, and being Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
He's not as versatile of a player as we think, but I thought some credit deserves to be thrown his way for the way he played this game in his actual position.
This is the opposite of what you've been calling for in terms of bringing new players in order to get them some minutes. But if you look at the 11, they clearly picked a veteran heavy team, and it did, you know, have the same feel as past teams.
Absolutely.
I do kind of think that either with the champions, it's like they're going to have this awful season in the league, but they're going to win this Campeones Cup. Offers them a chance for some reason to power up by the time they did it, and then at the end of the season say, well, we won a piece of silverware.
Sure, and considering, I still think it's easy to forget about how bad Toronto's been for the entire history of the club. That's still possibly significant.
This is true. One team that really surprised me this week, and I don't think that there's anybody who just took this in stride, was Minnesota, who started on Wednesday with this, they started on Wednesday when everybody else was in a cup competition, beating New England 2-1 at home, in a modest game that I thought just showed how good Darwin Quintero is right now.
The U.S. Open Cup one, right? Oh, no, sorry, that was MLS, sorry.
That was a league game on a day that everybody else was in cup competitions.
Very, very strong performance there. Go ahead.
I was going to say that their penalty shoving the attacker well off the ball on a FKV was very unnecessary. But the key point that I have written down at the end of the notes was for this game was, fuck, Mini is good now.
So, yeah, that I think I had in so many words, too, of like, and I felt a little bit vindicated because we've talked for so long about the fact that Minnesota is actually a good team. And this, for me, was the week where we're like, see, when all the pieces come together, it works. Also, let's give credit to the fact that Quintero is just tearing up MLS and tearing defenses apart. My goal of the week is where he just burns defenders. I believe it's in this game. I hope it's in this game. I hope I'm right. He just runs through like four defenders and bashes it into the net from a really silly angle. I was going to bring up the goal to make sure, but I have to watch this MLS ad first.
Yeah,
it is this one where I believe the ball comes out and he's able to control it, and then he goes through at least four New England players and then just scores from an absolutely insane angle. He picks up a stray ball. He wins it at the top of the box. He actually really goes through five defenders in the end and then hits it from a very tight angle. And this was not his only goal of the week, but it's my goal of the week.
Because after, you know, this is the thing, is that, you know, we've talked a little bit about Minnesota every time. I feel like it's unfair to me that every time I see teams like Colorado or Minnesota get home wins, I'm like, oh, their teams must have needed that because they've had some poor run of forms as of late. But you know, you can blink and then all of a sudden Minnesota is seventh and pushing on the playoff door. And somehow they beat LAFC 5-1.
Yeah.
That is a monumental score that, you know, announces that we're for real, the team would say.
And I think they always have been. And if I'm thinking back to our conversation last week about Adrian Heath's post-game comments about how players are just kind of doing their own thing, I feel like this is the week where maybe the message stuck. And we saw them see out games. First of all, in a pretty tightly contested match where they weren't in complete control midweek. And then just came in and did everything they're good at against LAFC. And when you think back to the beginning of the season, how much talk there was about LAFC and how much hype there continues to be around that team. Minnesota came in home game and absolutely destroyed them. And it wasn't because LAFC was missing a ton of key pieces or, you know, there's no, really no excuse for it. I think there's certainly things LAFC could do better. But we've talked about Minnesota's attacking ability out wide and how quick they can be in transition. It's just never clinical enough.
Yeah.
And this was on full display of, now that they've got Quintero and Ibarra, and they filled sort of the missing hole, or not the missing hole, that sounds like another film. Now that they filled the hole that they've been, from the player that they've been missing in Ibsen, if they're focused and disciplined, they're very, 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 very hard to beat.
Yeah.
And this was just, it was a lot of goals in quick succession, but it also wasn't like LAFC just gave up hope. They were so quick and so clinical in their finishing, there wasn't much time for defenders to react. Certainly, I think LAFC could have done a better job, but I feel like Minnesota has absorbed some of the tactics that Atlanta has employed against them and used against other teams of just throw everything forward and just play with such pace that the other team gets completely out of sorts. And within 10 minutes, you know, LAFC is down 4-1 and has no real way back into this game.
I've said that I think that the inefficiency that can be exploited right now in soccer is teams that let off near the end of games, near the end of especially the first half. And mm-hmm. Quintero scored. Not only did Quintero score in stoppage time in the midweek game, but he scores again in stoppage time is part of a 1-2 punch with Christian Ramirez that really rewards playing with full pressure and full attention at the latter part of the period.
And Ramirez has just been so clinical in his finishing as well. I thought Ramirez had, you know, the talk will be about Quintero and his fancy footwork, and that should be talked about. But Christian Ramirez has just really come into his own in the last couple of weeks, and I think has had overall a really good season. But they looked like a different team. But to me, they also looked like the team they should have looked like all season long, with the changes that they've made. The interesting thing will be, now that they've earned themselves a playoff spot, can they keep it and can they see out games a little bit more with a little bit more focus and discipline that we hope to have seen earlier in the season?
They're not there quite yet. And the issue that I think is plaguing teams all over the league in both conferences is that you look up and you say, for a team that's in the ascendancy, you look up and you say, who am I going to displace? Minnesota's sitting on 28th points in 7th. In 5th and 6th, you've got Portland on 31 and Real Salt Lake on 30. Well, maybe it's not impossible. But those are both teams that are themselves on hot streaks.
To some degree. Although, you know, when we get to RSL, I do think Minnesota can displace them. And what's become worrying for Whitecaps fans is that, you know, they're who we're playing on Saturday. And right now, the way Minnesota looks in their tactics, I really, really hope I'm wrong, but I think they're going to tear us to pieces. I really do. And unless something significantly shifts for Vancouver Whitecaps, I don't think they're ready for a hot Minnesota.
I'm gonna cross my fingers and say that Minnesota has one win and 8 losses on the road, and hope that that form plays out in that game.
I hope so too. I really do. I'm not trying to be too down on my home team, but heavens to mercy, it's gonna be a hot one. But we got a lot of games to talk about still.
Let's talk about RSL because we were there. RSL played Colorado in what I thought was one of many games, including one we've already talked about, where you know, both teams made their own little arguments, and then it ended in a draw. RSL perhaps could have put Colorado away here. It did not. I thought it was really funny that like 4 minutes in, when you're watching the highlight package, the goal, which takes place in the 4th minute, The goalkeeper says, there's no divine right for RSL to walk in for free for 3 points. Then RSL scores immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this was a difficult game for them, missing their coach. Petke's out for the this game and the next one.
With his bank account summarily fined.
It was also great to see Plata start. I think he's earned it. I was watching this game going, there's been lots of talk about João Plata not getting consistent minutes at RSL this season. And went, who could potentially play on a left wing to replace our teenage talent that we could probably get for a song? I've hated João Plata for a long time, but I would be totally okay with him bombing down the left side of the Whitecaps. But that's not important because he's not doing that.
We signed Blas Perez, so I feel like João Plata is at least less.
Blas Perez was my last stand of getting over stuff, so I'd take anybody at this point.
Plata had a great game with his goal and his assist. The game kind of rests on how Colorado get back into it is with a VAR called penalty, suggesting that the RSL defender just obstructs a shot. Now, it's hard to say because the commentators are against it. They don't think it's a penalty, even though it's called as a penalty by VAR. Because on the grounds that the attacker is able to get off a shot, but he's only able to get off like something of a halfway shot because the defender is all up in his business.
Right, but that's the defender's job.
That is true. There is no...
And he brings him down after he takes his half shot. So I feel like that's the thing, is the defender does what a defender is supposed to do and gets in his way. But he's not impeding his ability to take a shot, and he's not bringing him down. But as soon as he takes a shot, then he pulls him down.
But that is actually what I have in my notes. I think that's still... Because the shot was so slow, I think it is still a penalty. Because if you take the whole idea of shots out of it, it is purely spoken a foul in the penalty area. The defender doesn't get the ball and he takes the player down while the ball is still alive.
Okay, that complicates it. I was ready to fight you on that, but that's fair. I would need to see all 26 angles again. I don't think it's a penalty, or at the very least, I think it's very soft. I think this is one of those ones, though, had Mike Petke been there, he might have gotten sent off again. It's just, what's a penalty anymore? And can we get some clear definition of it, or explanation to it? However...
It's funny you should say that.
Go on,
because,
then.
Because...
eat my words right now?
Do you have one moment? Do you have anything else you want to say about this game before I leap into...
No, prove me wrong.
The game, the weekend's other big VAR penalty cavalcade. Columbus 3-2 Orlando. Columbus beats Orlando at home. Yeah. But Orlando was leading 2-1 when a penalty is called... on Mullins of Columbus, from what you can see in the video in the highlights, it's hard to say what he was actually called for. Maybe he has his hand up and is contacting the attacker at the time. But not only is the penalty called, the penalty is confirmed by VAR, and MLS has made a statement, Pro. Has made a statement that both Silviu Petrescu and the VAR John Freeman erred in that Petrescu had it wrong. It was Mullins of Orlando, by the way. The referee had it wrong and the VAR had it wrong to not review it.
And I agree with that call. I don't know what that means in MLS speak. I don't know if they get some extra TAM or GAM or SPAM or
nothing.
How that turns out. But
a fat lot of nothing. Just
a fat lot of nothing. And,
Columbus gets the tying goal that allows Will Trapp to come in the final minutes and score the go-ahead and the 3 points.
No. Okay, so this is, to me, the travesty of this decision is it takes away from Will Trapp's goal of the season.
That's fair.
Nobody has a right to hit a shot from that far out. He's at least 40 yards out. Well, that might be exaggerating.
Yeah,
he's at least 35 yards. I think he's more than 35 yards out. Nobody should take that shot and just buries it. And, of course,
that was so pretty.
Our friends in Columbus, we want them to keep their club. I leapt through the roof at this goal. This should have been a 2-2 draw. Who knows if Trapp pulls that off if that decision doesn't go their way. But I think, ultimately, it is the wrong call. It's unfortunate for Orlando that's just looking for any bit of anything. Who, as a club, I feel like they have been playing better and playing with a little bit more chemistry and making some good decisions. And it's just one of those ones where it goes against you. And at the same time, you know, Orlando hasn't done themselves any favor earlier on in the season. That every club experiences this, where at least one game you should have won or at least drawn, and you get nothing out of it. And the wrong decision was made, we know that. But Orlando needs a break, and they need to create that for themselves.
Yeah.
But the goal is really, you know, whatever happens to the Columbus Crew, that goal is going down in infamy in that city.
It's really stunning.
Is the stuff of wonders. It's superb.
It's stunning, and again, a great stoppage time goal as well at the end of the game. The last sort of big draw of the week was Houston and Dallas in their big rivalry derby, the Texas Derby. Their first meeting of the year. Somehow they haven't met yet. And there was a lot of fire, despite the fact that they both score in the first 10 minutes and then don't score again for the rest of the game. Everything else happened in that game.
Yeah.
Dallas scores on the first minute. Matt Hedges. And then Mauro Minota scores on the eighth. I had this down in my notes as to the nature of those particular... Right. It was a header for Hedges with a nice little chip. For Benotis to equal up, but then you see a bunch of crazy stuff happens in the second half, including a penalty is called, which Joe Willis saves. A penalty is called on Houston. A goal is scored and then
yeah,
a goal scored and then reversed. So there's a saved penalty and a disallowed goal to create the most amount of drama impossible in the second half without actually ever scoring a goal.
Yeah. The offside goal, I really struggled to see how it was offside, but I really struggled to see how a lot of calls are made in this game. But yeah, I originally when I saw the result, I was like, I don't know if I really want to watch this where the only two goals are scored in the first 9 minutes of the match. But these two teams sort of stuck it out and fought for things. To me, I'm actually looking at the bigger picture of this game, which is that Houston Dynamo, we know, have been up and down all season long, and they've punished teams and teams have punished them. And they really seem to be they're kind of usually an all or nothing team. They're going to win 4-0, and then the next week they're going to lose 4-0. But Dallas has kind of become that as well. And for me, the worrying part is that Dallas is, well, it's not worrying because part of me wants to hate them, but FC Dallas has really lost the ability to just put games away. And I'm not sure why they made this game so difficult for themselves. And to me, the personnel that they have on the pitch really needs to be putting games like these to bed for a struggling Houston Dynamo. Dallas also seem to not really have a plan. I mean, they go up in 49 seconds. They've got the lead. And then they never really look to have much else in it for the rest of the game, besides a few half chances. And that's been the story for the last 4 or 5 games, where maybe luck has gone their way a couple of times, but for the most part, they've looked just a little bit out of sorts.
They made a big personnel move when they sent Kellen Acosta to Colorado for Dominique Badji.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know what your opinion of this trade is, because I read it and I was like, what? And then I thought about it the other way and I was like, what?
I think that...
How do you evaluate it?
My honest first opinion was great for Dominique Badji, somebody who has been putting his all in a no-hoper Colorado season. One of the key positive lights in that side, and now he gets to be on a team that has, you know, is in a playoff position.
Yeah. Acosta,
yeah, I'm not sure how you rate that.
Initially, I kind of went, why would you get rid of Acosta? And then I also went, why would you get rid of Badji? But the trade does seem to make sense a little bit in terms of just shaking things up. And I think maybe this is one of those rare moments where it kind of makes sense, and that I think both teams are actually getting something they really need. Colorado Rapids are getting a player that is a little bit more consistent and a little bit more clinical. And although they're trading Dominique Badji, who's been great for them this season and a pretty consistent performer for them, FC Dallas also just needs to shake things up a little bit. They didn't make a lot of off-season moves, which we talked about, and they kind of kept things more or less the same. And they've done okay, but they really do need something more going forward. Arudy has been up and down. When he's great, he's great, but hasn't really produced for them. So this gives them another attacking option. And Kellen Acosta has not really had a ton of opportunities this season with the Rapids. So maybe this sees him getting... Kellen Acosta has not really had that many minutes with Dallas. So hopefully with the Rapids, he's got that opportunity to shine.
As long as they give the Badji the minutes. If they get him and don't play him, that's a real waste.
That was my main thought too, is to take a player that has been in MLS for a while, has a great work ethic, and is in form. If he's just on the bench and kind of being used as a sub, that could really hurt him. So I hope for Badji's sake that this is a good move. And I think, you know, for the Colorado Rapids that are getting Kellen Acosta, that's a great bit of business for them. But they are now missing a player that's in form for them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You had, I think, two very different games in which there was a little bit of hope, and then the hope was drained away. The first involved Philadelphia. CJ Sapong scoring against the LA Galaxy to establish a 1-0 lead, and then LA scores 3 times.
Yeah. And credit to Galaxy. And the Dos Santos brothers turned on the charm in this one and actually managed to produce something. LA is still such a baffling team to me to watch, and I don't know how you read this one, but I just... You know, they're just so complete crap 1 week, and then the next week they look incredible. And it's easy to be like, well, they're only playing Philadelphia. But as you said, Philadelphia goes up early on into this match, and Philadelphia's been turning things around for themselves. So it's really hard to rate, you know, where LA Galaxy should or could be. But considering the atrocious start to their season... The fact that they're now sitting fourth in the Western Conference, I think just it goes to show Ziggy Schmidt understands players and he knows how to get the best out of them and doesn't take crap from them either. And he knows how to understand big personalities. And as much as we'd all hate to admit it, a fit Ibrahimovic comes into this match and forget fit, just a player who understands the game to that level. The play of the week for me is that pass between three defenders that feeds Ola Kamara. Kamara gets a wonderful, wonderful finish. Like, it's all on Kamara to finish that one. But, you know, when you're getting that kind of ball from a player like that, I think you play at a different level.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that that's what separates Zlatan from being just like a poacher, you know, which I think is how sometimes people see him. But it's not just that he has an opportunist streak. He truly does understand how to play the ball and in how to see channels and how to move to create these plays. And I don't know that he was always known as a playmaker, and maybe there is a little bit of the difference in level that allows him to do that. But he's just really pleasant to watch when doing that.
And if there's an upshot to this whole like retirement league thing for MLS, it's that you see players come in that traditionally you've seen as kind of only doing one thing, and you just realize the pedigree is very different. And you get to see them show off different abilities. And as much as Ibrahimovic talks about being the greatest player on the planet, etc., we're not beginning to see it because he's shown it elsewhere, but we're beginning to see, in MLS at least, a place for these players who maybe are at the twilight of their career, but get to play different roles. And I think about Rooney in DC. You know, Rooney left Man United and left Everton because he wanted to be a playmaker. And he wanted to be that midfield player. But in Europe and in England, he doesn't have the stamina for it. And as physical as MLS can be, it's still just like being able to read the plays and know where players are going to run. Of course, it can be frustrating when they don't know where to run or what play to make. But we're beginning to see some of that pedigree come out, where it might seem a bit of a waste to have Ibrahimovic standing in the middle of the park looking for the passes, but it works. And in this game, in this game in particular, he gets his rewards as well, and just shows that he's still got that world-class finishing ability.
I think that what is so interesting is how fast he has taken to this team. Because we were talking when he was, you know, first being mooted as a potential player, you know, how is he going to work with Ola Kamara? Well, he works great with Ola Kamara. He's got a lot of chemistry. He's got a lot of chemistry with a lot of players of this team. And when we talk about, you know, super teams generally need a season or so to cook, we're seeing Ibrahimovic adapt at a much faster rate
than because he's played for a lot of teams. That's the other thing too, is that like he's not just a fantastic player and one of the best. He's played with a lot of teams. He's played with a lot of different players. And everywhere he's gone, of course, the drama follows him around with the on-field and off-field bust-ups and things like that. But he's played with a crap ton of different types of players. So his ability to read others' abilities is very, very high. And this game was a perfect example where he can be a difference maker. But it means that everybody else around him has to show up.
His, the defense is still in a weird position. One of the big changes that they made, and I'm trying to find what the what formation change they did to make it work, because they did start in what appeared to be a three-man back. It looks like they started with a three-man back. From the MLS site, but apparently they didn't start Alessandrini and they brought him in for Thomas Hilliard-Arce at halftime, and that was a big part of the change in plans.
interesting.
Yes. Oh, I see. So Ashley Cole gets suspended, and Perry Kitchen is also out, and they bring in Zlatan came in for Alessandrini. Of course, they wouldn't bench Alessandrini for a defender, but and you know it makes sense to start Zlatan, but once they bring him in, it's a really big impact.
Yeah. Couple other results quickly. New York Red Bulls beat New England, blanked them 2-0. This one I have almost no notes other than New England continues to not really know who they are. Sorry. They know who they are as a club, but just really didn't seem to have a strategy going to this game. And then New York Red Bulls just do what they do. And overpowered them.
Gets his 99th goal.
Well done.
A penalty is called back when he hits the arm. I forget who it was for, but that's basically what I have.
Yeah, not much in this one. Is it just bias that we continue to really not have that much to say about the New York Red Bulls, even when like they're a good team? They're just sometimes so boring to talk about.
Well, I mean, like
it's the same. It's kind of it's always the same players that we talk about.
It's not boring to watch because it's quite exciting to watch. They have lots of attack and somehow Bradley Wright Phillips pops up in the 6-yard area and is able to score a goal unmarked, even though he does that in every single game. And nobody has figured out.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, first of all, he's a brilliant player and. And the fact that he's doing what he's doing in any league at his age, it just his ability to get into space. But also, you bring up the point of, like, do people not look at tapes and know going into the game, like, just swarm him? Like, just somebody mark him, just anybody mark him. And if anybody's going to mark him, perhaps put 2 or 3 players on him.
I might be getting out there to watch Red Bulls. I'm going to watch the New York City Whitecaps game, and I might be able to also get down to watch New York LAFC.
Oh,
on the same weekend. Which
that's exciting. That's more exciting about the second game than the first. But I've always wanted to see a soccer game in a baseball stadium too. So
I'm gonna get to do both. I'm gonna get to go to Yankee Stadium, which is a famous venue in sport, to see the strange narrow pitch, and then I'm going to get to go to Red Bull Arena, which I really enjoyed when I went.
Are you bringing your measuring tape with that one?
Yeah, I kind of wondered if they would just let me go down there and double check that it's all up to standard.
That'd be great if you could.
The other team in different circumstances that had this, you know, glimmer of hope was DC United, who lost 3-1 to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I believe they also scored first on the 8th minute. Zoltan Stiber.
Stiber, yeah.
Scored very early. You kind of wondered, you know, did they transform on a dime when they added Wayne Rooney, or did they just get a bunch of goals past Vancouver and it turned out to be the latter one? The Stiver's goal was pretty. It was awesome. They can't turn away the offensive rush that is Atlanta in the end.
No, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think DC's positioned themselves nicely to make a little bit of a late season run here. I'm just going to say this to shit disturb and to also give voice to every fan that is sick and tired of hearing about how good Atlanta is. But Joseph Martinez is the most annoying player in MLS right now. And
I'm ready for this spicy take.
you know, the neck tattoos far exceed other parts. At times, like, the dude spends an awful lot of time on the pitch and an awful lot of time not getting carded for anything. I fully think he could pull out a machine gun and blow away an entire section of the people on the opposing team's bench and not get carded for it or anything else. However, this was a relatively clean game, and hats off to him, but, like, we know who's winning the Golden Boot this season. He's set a record, and credit should be...
Six hat tricks.
What's that?
Six, I think, right? Was it his sixth in his career? Yeah, I guess it would. What is it, six in his career, or is it six in the season is the record?
I have no idea.
I'll look. Continue your point.
You look. He broke a record. He just has that extra little bit of ability in everything and can score goals in so many different ways. And I'm also being like, I'm doing this a little bit tongue in cheek because I love this kind of striker and I hate them. I hate this striker when they're not on my team. It's not my preferred style of playing, but that's what it takes sometimes. And when you're scoring 21 goals in a season, you've still got, you know, 12 or 14 games to play. That says something. He knows where to be and what to do. The big thing that I took away from this game was just realizing that Atlanta was very, very lucky to hold on to Martinez and to Almiron this season. And we know what kind of money is behind the club. But I feel like if Davies is going, Martinez and Almiron are for sure going.
I'm surprised, you know, if you had asked, we never thought about this, but if you had asked me to, you know, before the season to put money on whether or not Almiron or Davies goes first, I would have definitely said Almiron.
Absolutely. And I think they'll both go. And I have no doubt that Atlanta will come up with answers for those. And I think this whole time they've actually been looking and we've seen them building to the squad, even with the quality that they have. But and it's a little bit disappointing in a way that we still have to talk about stars in MLS. It's just the inevitability is they'll go elsewhere. I'd be absolutely fucking gobsmacked if Martinez is back next season.
But Martinez, he got his sixth hat trick, which is the all-time MLS record. It was previously shared by himself, Landon Donovan, Sebastian Giovinco, Stern John of Trinidad and Tobago, and Diego Serna.
Not bad company. Especially when half of that company is yourself. Not half.
The one thing half that company is I guess it's he stands alone at the top of the mountain now. I was going to say that the thing that amused me, when you talk about his sort of bombastic style that he never seems to get any feedback for, was that he has this this first goal. He really appears to, I just have, boy, he just trucks into Ousted, right? And when the goal goes in, he has this anxiety look. He has this anxiety celebration where he doesn't look at anybody and he kind of does the Maradona. It looks, his expression almost looks like the Maradona hand of God. Come celebrate with me or else they'll call the goal off, because he really just does careen right and lock midsections with David Ousted.
Hold on, I'm bringing it up. I've forgotten which play is.
I believe it's first goal.
It is the first goal, yeah. Sorry, I'm waiting for the slow-mo replay to come back.
I'm trying to remember the exact sort of blocking, but I think he's kind of...
Yeah, kind of Ousted goes for the ball first, gets a glove on it, but Martinez is there. That's another one where I go, the goalkeeper's got to make themselves bigger, and it's difficult. I get wanting to protect the goalkeepers, and I, believe me, nobody else would rather see this goal called off or have something go against Martinez. I think this is a clean goal. And the thing that they capitalized here is that Ostedt has great reflexes and is great at saving penalties. We know that. We've seen it. But his positioning at times is off. And here he just gets it a little bit off. And again, I go, Martinez has every right to be there and to challenge that ball. And yeah. The reason why Ostedt collapses is because he pulls out of the challenge. As a goalkeeper, you have to own that space. And you have to go in and sacrifice your body. And it's shit, but that's what you have to do. And he doesn't do it. Instead, he pulls out a little bit. And Martinez makes contact. But he has every right to go for that ball.
That's fair.
I think.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it invalidates the goal, but I do think it's a little rough.
So the exact opposite of what I just said.
Yeah, no, I know that, but it even though. But I'm still kind of agree with you because I do think it was eventually legal, but if you know, this is the sort of thing that you would point out as you know, physical play for Martinez. Let's have some sour truth. I like Ousted. You like Ousted.
Yeah.
You see him a lot this season, and maybe it's just because he's playing for DC in unenviable situations.
Yes. And, you know, and also we're paying more attention because we're watching a favorite player on a different team.
That is true.
And I hope I'm not being overly harsh in this. And I feel like he's had a tough time at DC because their back line has been so bad. But, you know, as the Whitecaps tried to exploit against them, or numerous teams have tried to exploit against them, is that Ostedt's positioning is not always amazing. And so he can make spectacular saves, but sometimes he can be a little off. And this is one of those calls where I go, I think I'd give the benefit to the attacker here, because it's the goalkeeper being indecisive. And you get fouled.
Yeah.
In those situations. Goalkeepers get fouled. That's just the reality of it, you know. But when you're out of position or you're slightly behind the play and you're not owning that space and nobody else is marking that player, it's up to you to do that. And sometimes that means a striker is going to go through you. But I still think Martinez is first to the ball on that one.
I think that's it for games. We've heard your goal of the week. Do you have a team of the week?
Oh, yeah. Are we still doing... I set this whole thing up, and then I'm like, wait, are we doing it?
Well, since you called Quintero for goal of the week, that leaves me clear to pick Will Trapp.
Yeah. Even though it's off unfortunate call that comes from before and maybe should have been the tying goal instead of the winning goal. Yeah, it's gotta be Columbus. Team of the week, I'm going Minnesota. Not just because they beat a high flying team, but because they're coming into their own and they're starting to do the things right that we'd hoped they'd do right all season.
If you hadn't called Minnesota, I was definitely going to, because it's really exciting the turnaround they've been able to make. But because you did, I'm going to pick Montreal, who have themselves made a interesting turnaround. And even if it doesn't necessarily come with results this year, I think it's the start of something special.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure I 100% agree, but you could be right. They've got something. When you look at their academy system and all of that, no, you're right. You're right.
The thing we alluded to that happened with Toronto is that And we haven't seen them had a home game since then, is they did the Canadian Championship against the Ottawa Fury. There was a conflagration in that game, TFC 1-0, where a group of TFC supporters who were standing in sort of a loose pitch side area tried to light flares by the report I remember reading in Maple Leaf Forever, I think, threw the flares on the pitch because they were too hot and damaged the pitch, and then tried to use flags to put out the flares and then lit the flags on fire because they're flares.
Okay, I'm going to chime in with two things here. I've been in a couple of supporters sections in my time.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say alcohol might have played an influence in this. Also, I don't think some accidental, oh no, we didn't know what would happen, really happened. I feel like this was a drunk people with flares incident. And all the video footage I've seen, like, really seems to indicate no flares being thrown on the pitch so much as people starting fires in the stands accidentally because they're wasted. But also, yeah, like, it's clearly the actions of few, and that's usually how it happens at any football game. But it seems like more idiocy in the stands. But also a sort of convenient story invented after the fact. And now Toronto FC has suspended all privileges of all supporters groups. And I have no idea what that means, but.
So I kind of wonder, and yeah, we won't see it. We won't know until the next home game comes back. And I feel like this would mean more if it had an end date on it, or if we understood what the next step is afterwards. But I think that, you know, there's been a lot of finger pointing to certain TFC supporters groups who deny that they had anything to do with it, that being the inebriati group that sort of practices the ultras culture. And I think it is important for anyone that's ever attended a USL game at one of these, you know, at a bigger football stadium or a you know, any of those sort of, you know, outsized things where you're in a group of, where you're in a supporters group, but the supporters group is like 9 people.
Yeah.
That can always sort of backfire, especially if you, regardless of whether of what group attachment there is, have some grand vision of being an ultra, despite the fact that, you know, you could fit uncomfortably in a sedan, or sorry, in a minivan.
Yeah.
With the people around you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really unfortunate because now all the supporters groups will get punished for it, but I think it is the right call from the club to try to figure out what's going on. And, you know, I just hope that more shitty people get banned from the game and banned from the stands, because we've all been there. We're trying to enjoy a game, and it's great to have enthusiasm and great to see the banners and, like, maybe even flares, whatever. But, like, this was just so uncalled for and so clearly not actual fans of the game, but people who are there to cause a problem. And their definition of ultra means destroying property, means violence. And I feel like many of us who have been at games come up against these types of people and you go, are you actually watching what's going on the pitch there? Do you like this team? Do you know what this team is even called? Or do you just want to start shit because of your inability to express masculinity in a healthy way? I don't know. Maybe that's too on the nose, but yeah.
Yeah.
The vast majority of supporters groups want to actually watch a game of football.
Yeah. You gotta, you know, I think that MLS is a lot more fun when you are looking at it as, you know, a shared project that we're all here to try and enjoy soccer and grow the game.
Yeah.
As opposed to creating.
And if your major protest is Ottawa Fury, then perhaps examine yourself.
I think that the one thing in it, maybe the tactic they're employing here is sort of if nobody takes credit for this, we're going to have to punish everyone, which on one hand, I get when you think of this as an organization to organization dilemma, but there are plenty of Yahoos that are fans of any team, and especially Toronto FC.
Can I interrupt for a second? Is the fact that you just used the term Yahoos is firm confirmation that you're about to turn 30.
Wow! Ouch!
These Yahoos out there!
These fucking Yahoos! Well, what can you do?
Oh, dear.
I can't change me. It 30 or not. Maybe this is it. I'm not cool anymore. I just want to fucking yell but not light things on fire as much.
Oh, dear. So, an interesting week in MLS, and we've talked a lot about the Canadian teams, and of course we've talked about Toronto tonight, and we've taken our MLS digs at them, but we should of course mention that we both have friends and family in Toronto, and following another horrific, violent thing that happened there, that our thoughts are with everyone. And
absolutely.
What more can you possibly say? But we look forward to supporting all our soccer teams and battling together on the pitch. And
my thoughts go to everyone there. It's such a hard thing to live through.
Yeah. And as much as we like to bash TFC, we both have Toronto connections, and a lot of people in Toronto were thinking about.
Yeah. Where can we find you online?
Lurking behind the ever growing despondency of That's So MLS on Twitter, where mostly I'm just like, God is dead. We lost another game. Where can we find you, though, for slightly more optimistic things?
Well, I mean, like, if you really want, like, I feel like that's another direction. Maybe we don't see enough black metal influence in soccer support. If we could get, you know, an all black dye job with like spikes or something. I don't know what I'm looking for here. But you can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I'm an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at www.thatsomls.com and on iTunes and wherever podcasts are found.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you know, don't get sent off, don't get sent off because you're having a bad game. Don't get sent off because you're having a bad game. I thought there was no red cards, and then I remembered.
And read Juarez's apology letter, and you know, just don't be too passionate, and don't get too sent off for your passion. It's going to be a good week next week.
Try not to get sent off before then.
Yeah.